F4.
Number 8A.
They go to the next tone of spirit, still showing how this Christ consciousness that was ready to come to the Jewish nation at that time, to the world at all, is being brought forth. We come to spirit, and the epitome reads, life identifies itself. You have again life identifying itself, that's life and soul. How? And now we have a tone of spirit coming in by reflecting really the fullness of glory of the only Christ. It shows now that if we have given birth through the mind of Christ to ourselves, so that we are the Christ consciousness, which only the divine mind knows, that divine mind reflects the fullness, really, of the glory of Christ. We get the sense that spirit is reflecting itself in its glory, in its fullness, so that we have everything the Father has, that the Christ consciousness can get hold of everything that belongs to the Father. First of all, he shows in 14 that the Word, again you have to put there the Logos, because Logos is bigger than the Word, because the Logos is really the fourth side, the city, the fourth calculus from the standpoint of the Word. So the Logos was made flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld his glory, the glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. Now, this gives rise to quite a few questions. Namely, the Word was made flesh has been the point of discussion that has separated the Christian faith in many, many sections. Some said, well, God has become matter, has become flesh, and therefore has become material. Others have another point of view and said, oh no, that doesn't mean that it came to the flesh so as to destroy incarnate error, as we have it in Christian Science. So that we have to see the spirit or the Logos never becomes its opposite. This is spiritualism, that thinks that something that is true can be turned into its very opposite. But spirit is always spirit, and therefore has never any touch of the flesh or of matter. But it came to the flesh, or was made flesh, and dwelt among us, meant that the Word, Mrs. Eddy says, when the Word is made flesh among mortals, the truth of life is rendered practical on the body. This is what it means, you see. Like the Christ definition in the glossary, that Christ is the divine manifestation that comes to the flesh in order to destroy incarnate error, fleshly error, to destroy what the flesh is arguing as being existent and self-existent, having law and life and substance, intelligence in matter. So one has to see the spiritual rendering of it. You can't just take the word, the literal sense of it. This is a subject that has always puzzled the Christians. Paul said perhaps this in these terms, in order that we understand that the flesh does not turn, that the spirit or the Logos does not turn into flesh. He said, and the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God. So he said, yes, I know that I have a belief that I live in the flesh, but the life that I live, the consciousness which I entertain, and the consciousness which governs me, my body, and the mortal man, is really my faith or my understanding of the Son of God. So, another rendering in this verse is this, and it dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory. We could see the glory when the Spirit is touching the flesh, namely, that it has power over the flesh, that the flesh is retreating, so to say, before the influx of the Spirit, that the more we entertain in consciousness, the spiritual consciousness of the Christ, the less the flesh has its arguments, the less the body and matter can put forward its claims. And we beheld his glory, the glory, and this is another interesting point, the glory of the only begotten of the Father. Now, the only begotten of the Father has been translated in various languages in many different ways. It's again a rendering which is not so clear or which cannot be translated easily. The latest meaning that I got from those who should know about it, who should know the language, says it is what he actually wanted to say, that it was the glory of the monogene of God. Monogene, that's a new term. Mono, you know what it means. Mono means one. Huh? And gene is Genesis. Huh? Gene from Genesis, from genetic. So it's the only Genesis of God. Huh? There is just one Genesis of God. That's the Son. There is not many Christs. There is just one Christ. We cannot put Christ into the plural. So that it's only one Christ. And that one Christ has been begotten of the Father. Meaning that the Father, or God, Father, the Word, only has one Christ and says, I have a Christ, and that's the only begotten Son of the Father. And that is full of grace and truth. Full of grace and truth. Again, this is a Hebrew idiom, which means grace and truth, which means full of revelation, full of sum of divine revelation. That's usually what's meant. Grace, it is given by us without works. That's grace. And truth is that what is revealed, the truth that is revealed to us without works. So he shows that in this one verse here, the tone of spirit, where we begin to see, if I entertain that consciousness of mind, which we had in the first subject of mind, and I see that I'm born of the divine mind, that the divine mind is my creator, that the divine mind knows me, not I knowing mind, but mind knowing me, mind having been really that which desired me, which really wanted me. I'm not an unwanted child. So many people know, and many people don't know it, that they are unwanted, that they were an unwanted child, and they suffer under it consciously or unconsciously quite a lot. Accept for yourself always that divine mind wished us, wanted us, desired us, that we are welcomed by the divine mind, that the divine mind really is that which brought us into being, that the divine mind is really that which gave us a mission, that had a plan for us, that the divine mind really desired us into coming into being. And so feel that you are wanted by God, that you are a wanted child by God. And that child in spirit is full of grace and truth. That child really, I accept, that therefore everything comes down from heaven in fullness and in grace, and there is nothing that does not flow down onto me, that does not stream down onto me. I'm just standing on a big waterfall that just pours over all the blessing on me. I culture that sense because the human mind always says, well, I wasn't really favored. My life is really rotten. My life is dry and without purpose and without a real joy, without real interest, without a real mission, without a real purpose, without a real meaning. It's just senseless. It's a fruitless life. Don't think of that. That's very often or quite common in consciously or unconsciously in the human mind, that one is not overflooded with a superabundance of grace and truth, with the superabundance of whatever the Father has is mine. And so we get the feeling that we reflect the infinitude of the richness of God. And in that way, we should really walk through the day and not feel that something is lacking in any way, and so that we miss our opportunity, we miss our chance, we miss our mission, we miss. Now, just fill your thoughts so that you feel that you are under the impact of the infinite blessing of Spirit. Then it is full of grace and truth. And 15, and John, this is still John the Baptist, John bear witness of him. You see, he always bear witness. He never is it. So just as we bear witness that Christian Science is very good and that Christian Science does this and that and that Christian Science can be a help and that Christian Science is something wonderful, we bear witness of it. But are we Christian Science? Not are we Christian Scientists, are we Christian Science? Or is Christian Science eat me? See, that's the question. That's the great question. And this will be evolved and evolved as we go on. And so he bare witness of him and cried, saying, this was he of whom I spake. Namely, he that cometh after me is preferred before me. For he was before me. And you see, great teaching sometimes seem paradoxical. He said, that comes after me, was before me. And naturally, he was saying something very deep. Namely, he was saying, he that comes after me, the me is John the Baptist. The me is the days of creation. He was a typical sense of good thinking, of good thoughts. He was a good human being. He was a fine character. So he was expressing the second degree of the translation of mortal mind in its fullest sense. But he said, he that comes after me, what comes after the days of creation? Well, after the days of creation comes the numerals of infinity, comes the synonymous terms, that they have no more beginning and end, that they are eternal, immortal. So after me, he is preferred before me. Yes, the numerals of infinity, the seven synonymous terms, are preferred before the days of creation, because the synonymous terms are those that bring into being the days of creation. Mind, the synonymous term mind, says, let there be light, and brings forth the first day of creation. So Spirit is God that says, and it's the synonymous term that says, let there be a firmament, the second day. So it's the bigger, it's preferred before me. Why is it preferred before me? And he goes on and says, for he was before me. Yes, before the days of creation, when was naturally God. We know that God created the heaven and the earth, and only then starts out with the 7 days of creation. So the seven synonymous terms are in being, that they were before it translated itself to human thought as good human thinking. So it was before me. Or you could say ideas are always before good thoughts, before divine thoughts, because they existed since time immemorial, whereas good thoughts had a beginning and an end. We began to think good thoughts. 16, and of his fullness have all we received. Again he repeats, you see that's now typical John. When he makes a big statement, he will repeat it at least 2 or 3 times. So he repeats it again and says, and of his fullness have we all received, and grace for grace. He even accentuates it. Before it was grace and truth. Now it's even more than that. It's grace for grace. Grace given freely. Given freely. The fullness of the richness of God given freely for what? For grace. For again showing that it is here for all, that we give it to all by grace and not by works, that it reflects itself, that grace reflects itself as again grace, so that we have a graceful attitude and cannot help but to testify gracefully. So there is continuous grace. Therefore, compared with Moses, naturally, he was teaching works, that we gain eternal life through works. Whereas the New Testament comes in, and Paul makes this very clear, that we live by grace, that it's given to us without works, not by the merits of the works. 17, for the law was given by Moses. Oh yes, he comes back, you see. The law was given by Moses. But grace and truth, again you have that same rendering, but grace and truth, by Jesus Christ. So he compares the Old Testament with the New Testament, just in one little verse, whereas Paul takes about 12 epistles to teach that we are living by grace and not by works. That was his strong point that Paul had. Actually, it is so that Moses was teaching, really, grace and truth, because that was an old Hebrew idiom which they had from Moses. But Moses taught it. He wasn't it. Whereas Jesus Christ was it. This is a great difference. So Moses did also teach grace and truth. The truth were his commandments, but he gave it by grace from the Mount of Revelation. He gave it. But because he only taught it, he couldn't see the Holy Land, and he couldn't go into the Holy Land. He had to stay back. He had to stay back and couldn't go over Jordan like the others. So he had always, you see, he was like something like John the Baptist. He could see the vision, but couldn't be it so much. He couldn't be it. He couldn't see that he is the very embodiment, the very incarnation. The Word was made flesh, that he wasn't the very incarnation of what he had seen on that on Mount Horeb. Whereas Jesus was not teaching Christian Science. He was not teaching grace and truth. He was it. He was grace and truth. This is the big difference also for us, that we have to see. Well, at the beginning we begin to teach Christian Science. We begin to teach what we have with our human mind understood about the truth of Christian Science. And so we begin to teach it because we are so happy about it, so full of it, that we say, gosh, if I don't give it out, I explode. That's usually the feeling I have, and says, now this has to go out, or I can't keep it anymore within myself, you see. But that is at the beginning. Actually, you see, if it is by grace and truth, then it should be Christian Science teaching. Christian Science is teaching, and not we teaching about Christian Science. It is Christian Science, that being in which we live and move and have our being, if that is seen clear and clear as to be our being, then it is our being, really, that is teaching. And the students then feel it at once, if one is talking about Christian Science or if Christian Science is teaching through us. And so let's see that this is happening, and it can happen when we see that we are not born of the flesh and blood and of the will of men, but that the divine mind is projecting us into being and is ushering us into being, so that we, with that divine mind, we get the fullness of spirit, the full reflection of spirit, the full blessing of spirit, and that therefore the whole full reflection of spirit is speaking within us, is really explaining itself through us, and not we teaching through science what is Christian Science. That's a great point. Then he goes on, 18, no man has seen God at any time. He can't see God at any time. But then he says, but the only begotten Son, again, that only outpouring of God, that the only, yes, monogene, that the only genesis of God, the only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, he has declared him. Can you see again what we have encountered over and over already in these few hours? That he tries to show that there is an outgrowth, an emanation, the only begotten Son. Well, the only begotten Son is the only creation, huh? But that creation is not outside God, but that it is inside God. It is in the bosom of God. Well, in the bosom of God is another idiom in order to show it is embraced within our consciousness. It's not outside. So again, think of that terrific statement of Mrs. Eddy, that spiritual creation is the outgrowth, the emanation of its infinite self-containment. And only if we culture that sense, we get slowly, slowly into that feel, and that wonderful feel that we feel we are always in God, no matter what we do, what we work. It is always a working, an emanation, an outgrowth, a new projection of that one God, but never projects itself outside of God. It's always within the divine principle. So I'm really principle walking around. Huh? I'm really principle's consciousness always walking around, being always principle itself. So he said, you see, he's begotten Son in the bosom of the Father. He's begotten in being itself, within it. That's why we can call it, it's a God Genesis. It's a God Genesis, God generating itself constantly within himself in an infinite way, in an infinite diversification and classification and individualization. So that there is an infinite dynamic of being going on, but never going outside of the divine principle. Never outside. This is what we have to learn. We learn it very easily, but what we have afterwards to culture so that we stay in that consciousness. It's a great sense here that he conveys. Always to see that transition that we make as we grow in our study of Christian Science and investigating Christian Science, that at the beginning we always seems that we have to know mind, and we taught that. Well, you have to know mind, you have to know spirit, you have to know what is soul, what is principle. And that's all right, but it's the beginning, it's the days of creation sense, it's the divinely metaphysical sense that we do that. But finally, we must come to the point where we begin to see that mind means that mind knows us, not that we know mind. But that mind knows me. And I begin to go around the day in, day out, and trying to see it is mind knowing me. Not I constantly saying, now what does mind mean about this? Now I turn to mind, and what does mind know about this and that? How does mind think about this and that? And so I still feel I am knowing what mind knows. Whereas mind knows me. And I have to put myself out of the way as much as I can so that only mind governs in the realm of mind. Mind is the only mind, is its own mind. And this is a culture, so that we are in the bosom of the Father, never outside. Yes, then the Jews came and asked John the Baptist, who art thou? They wanted to know who he is, because he had great attraction, he had a terrific following, he had a much bigger following than Jesus had, you know, just as Billy Graham has a bigger one than I have. So John said, no, I'm not the Christ. See, he was so aware of his identity. He knew that his identity is not the Christ idea. He knew it. He knew his identity was that he's a good chap. how that he knew. So he said, no, I'm not the Christ. And he said, I'm not even Elias of the prophets. What is he? So he said, I'm the voice of one crying in the wilderness. I'm the one who is crying in a chaotic situation, in a chaotic world, in the wilderness. I'm crying and crying and crying, what to that chaos? And he said, I cry, make straight the way of the Lord. That's his mission. He said, there must be order in that chaos. We must see that we have not to deal with chaos, but that we have to see that there is a higher law. And if we see the higher law, then chaos turns into order. Then we see the order in chaos. Because chaos is only a higher order than what we are aware of. And so he said, that's my mission. Can you see the mission of spirit? He said, my mission is the order of spirit. That I say there will be order, a spiritual order in being. And by golly, huh? John afterwards shows all the orders. We can't get rid anymore from this moment on of orders. Orders of category, of subcategory, of subcategories, orders within orders, orders of the four sides of the Holy City, orders of the Christ order, of the Christianity order, orders of the levels, all that comes in now. So the Baptist has seen that. He said, I cry in the wilderness, in that troubled world, in that chaotic world. You know, if you would see it properly, you would see the order in it.